sends us on the list for them. And our view is that if you've got broader support from all the road here stakeholders, the program could actually move more slowly. There's also uncertainty about what land reform should really achieve and how the results should be measured, whilst acknowledging that there's acknowledging both urban and rural dimensions. There's also been insufficient attention to the manner in which land is used, including implementation delays. We also have inefficient restitution processes. We also have lack of transparency and clarity, particularly when it comes to restitution procedures. And these are the issues that now are being investigated. There is lack of attention to tenure reform. Of the three branches of land reform, tenure reform has been the least addressed, even though a high proportion of South Africans live under unsecured tenure informal homeland. Policies that inhibit access to finance for land reform beneficiaries remain a key challenge that we need to address in South Africa. Insufficient resources and limited infrastructure capacity, particularly in the state, also need to be addressed if we are to make any meaningful dent or progress in the land reform space. Chair, we have summarized 10 key actions that we strongly believe that we need to embark upon as a nation if we are to accelerate land. We have dealt with these 10 key actions in detail in our written submission. We've also detailed our experience today through live examples in terms of projects that we've supported, and I will not touch on this, and I'm hoping that the members can go through that, and we are more than willing to take questions on those. As a starting point, we need to encourage all to acknowledge the impacts of dispossession and to commit to reform, to ensure that we can have a shared vision that sustains commitment. Secondly, we need to affirm property rights, the rule of law, and just and equitable compensation. Thirdly, it's our view that we need to clarify what land reform should achieve, acknowledging that there are both rural and urban dimensions, and measure progress systematically. While land reform has multiple broad social objectives, there is a need for a clearer policy priorities and clarity on how we will measure progress. We need to balance concern of acquisition with effective use of land. Current debates have unfortunately been focusing largely on acquisition, but there's been much less real focus on what happens after that land has been secured or transferred. And this now has been largely ignored. And in our experience, well-structured partnership would actually support productive use of land. As we've said, based on the project that we supported over the last couple of years, partnerships have succeeded where government has actually not or have limited success. So we strongly believe that there's a lot that we can learn from this. We also need to streamline the restitution process. We must have clear systems so that we are able to resolve disputes and manage complex cases. We, by way of an example, have got a number of projects that we are supporting, especially high-value claims, where you find that a claim was made 20 years ago and it hasn't been resolved. And if you zoom into what seems to be the challenges, you find that there has been inter-community disputes and poor administration schemes, and these matters have been driven through the court. And our view is that we need to make sure that we introduce some alternative, proper alternative dispute resolution mechanisms, and also make sure that we regulate these communal property institutions so that we can start ensuring that there are some We need to make the redistribution program more transparent, for example, so that South Africans should know how to apply for this as part of this redistribution program, how is land, for example, made available, the criteria for making this land available, etc., as well as current allocation. We also need to make sure that we resolve the conflicts that are associated with the tenure reform. I think the previous presenters are looking at the fact that this is one complex area. It area that communal areas, family impact, and the MM group. This is one area that we really need to deal with. We need to improve post-settlement conditions. The return of land without other factors of production prevents land from being used productively. This factor was further noted as an impediment in the diagnostic report prepared by the High Level Panel. Project being capable, skills, governance, organization, and management support in order to succeed. We also need to develop innovative mechanisms for financing land reform, because without access to capital, projects will continue to fail. And there's just a limitation on the government fiscal. For us to expect that through government access we'll be able to deal with land reform, I think it's going to take us quite a long time. We also need to increase the capacity of the state, lastly, to address the institutional weaknesses that are actually impeding land reform. Expropriating land without compensation, in our view, will not address the key institutional impediments to land reform, nor will it advance the actions required to accelerate land reform. The challenge now is to clarify the conditions under which expropriation without compensation may apply and start the hard bargaining and compromises that are needed in order to accelerate. In our view, we need to define those circumstances in which expropriation without compensation may apply, and those defined circumstances could cover, among others, unused land or land acquired by illegal means, land acquired, for example, through state grants, land, for example, developed with large state subsidies, absentee landlords, etc. Compensation must be based on just and equitable principle, accepting that in certain instances, still may be justified. Most importantly, it's our view that this, in one form or another, has to be determined by the courts. And the application should really be limited to land reform and focus on the institutions, security of Kenya as an institution. We will also need national legislation which clearly set out the procedures, the powers of the state, rights of landowners and beneficiaries, and this should be subject to some form of judicial review. Last step, we need to start hard bargaining and compromise is needed if we are successful in this form. And in this regard, all role players have got a role to play. For landowners, we need to start negotiating government and communities, prospective new owners for the finalization of the land phase. For financial institutions, we need to negotiate terms on which to finance land from properties as a provision of working capital. For land, for new land holders. Traditional authorities as well negotiate the land rights of families living under the former homeland. Government has to increase the resources available for land reform. We need to release state land for urban and rural development. We need to, most importantly, streamline procedures for processing institutions and make process of redistribution more transparent. In spite of this,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
that you could actually include a line that says there is a lack of consensus on the need for reform, that you would consider putting that line in your presentation. Means that your argument is based starts from a very, very high degree, almost a reactionary line. When I look at the names of the people who constitute your board, I'm just dumbfounded how we could start from that end. I don't hear those of us who are fortunate to live better, acknowledging that there are millions out there who have not made it into the past, and there has to be a set of agencies to try and alleviate that condition without following the formula that is set by those who already have. I think that's what was really eating away inside me.
farmers and other persons of need of property. Is that one of the focuses that you've experienced as a problem? Thank you.
You see, Mr. Sotelo, you see what lies ahead in the community, between the two views here. Those who see something and those who don't see something. So it will be interesting going forward when the committee debates. So over to you to answer.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to give over to my colleague to answer some of the questions that I'll deal with in my speech. Not a question. Over to you, Brian.
Chairman, I'll just try and take them quickly as they come. Please don't interpret the point about a lack of consensus as some doubt in our own minds about this. We are committed to land reform. It's all we do. That was the reason for us being started. If we had the consensus we need to move forward, I suggest we might not be here today. We're here because things, we don't have a clear enough national vision on this. So please take it in that spirit. In the sense of, you know, the voice of the people, where are the people in all of this? We can only speak to you on the basis of what we've experienced in trying to make this project of land reform work. And what we hear from the people we work with is they want their rights to be real. Make our rights real, they tell us. When we go onto a farm and you discover this was an operating farm, it might have employed 100 people, and you're sitting under a tree and you're talking to 5 people and you're saying, what has happened? Where are the people gone? They say they're gone. And there's no point in giving us something. In particular, the issue of transferring the land and then preventing us raising the capital, preventing us using the networks to use this land, make the rights real, is what we hear. On the question of, you know, this is not a new direction, it is just about indicating the difficulties that we've experienced. The heart of our submission is, you know, we mimic the doctors in this, and that is that we have to try to make the right diagnosis. And from the perspective we are sitting at, if we make the diagnosis that all of the difficulties we see arise from the Constitution, we will not cure the ills of this patient. Our experience is that they are these issues that are currently causing us the difficulties, and our fear is that when this process is completed, even completed with an amendment to the Constitution, these difficulties will remain. And that is what we want to try to address. In respect of, you know, I think the question is, where do we actually stand? As you've asked so many people on this question of expropriation without compensation, I think if we divide this into the three parts, on expropriation, if you were to ask us, we would say, yes, we think expropriation is likely to be required in order to complete the land reform program successfully. There will undoubtedly be cases where the state will have to use those powers. On compensation, should land be expropriated without compensation? We would say in cases where that is determined to be just and equitable, and that the courts uphold that to be the case, that should then be the case, based on justice and equity. On the matter of the Constitution, it is our lay opinion that it's not necessary to change the Constitution in order to take the actions that need to be taken. But we think there's a caution here. We are not constitutional lawyers. And we don't want to pretend expertise we don't have. It strikes us that at the end of the day, the question of whether the Constitution needs to be changed is a matter of constitutional law. So we don't want to overreach ourselves on that matter. I think that deals with...
I think there was one specific question from Honorable Swart pertaining to post-settlement support. I mean, this is one part, this is one area which I think we need to seriously address as a country. As Bumelana, our experience having worked on a number of projects is, our experience is that when you really give people the land without giving them post-settlement support, also based on the process that we've done, starting from ensuring that we put together commercial arrangements in place, ensuring that you make appropriate, you get the right commercial partners to partner with them, to ensure that you improve on the governance. The other experience, particularly with communities, if the first few monies trickle into the bank account, particularly if there are no proper governance processes, if there's no transparency, invariably you have infighting among the community. So assisting them to improve on their governance is really key. So this is one area that we've done a lot of work on. Organizational and management support is one area that we've done, that we've actually been assisting them. From assisting them to develop policies, to ensuring that they can establish a proper, appropriate vehicle for running their businesses, to setting up community trust if required, negotiation of shareholder arrangements, lease agreements, etc. And most importantly, to make sure that they are able to, from time to time, have annual general meetings, they can have their financials actually audited, etc. We find that in those projects where we've supported communities to a point where they are able to do this, there is more sanity, there are less infightings, and we find that private investors are more interested to actually come and to the party and actually assist these communities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I take the opportunity to thank Vumelana Advisory Fund for the presentation before the committee. We certainly have been enriched. Thank you very much. Members, you need 10 minutes? Will that be enough? All right. So let's break for 10 minutes.
Consequences. There's no saying that doesn't have consequences. Never. So all I say is,
you must be guilty.
That's why I've got enough time to come here and see the meeting. I'm not that